Warning, this podcast contains words that are going to come out of my mouth that you don't want to hear your children use in front of your teacher. What are we doing now? Yeah, seriously. All right. This is the face of the franchise. I'm tired of doing these f***ing intros. Welcome to HR Talk with JC and Ricky. I'm drunk. At work.
We're in a secret location. We have 5 people who dedicated their lives to HR. We have a professional singer, and then we also have a professional broadcaster here in the room. So we have a lot of people in the room, and we have no agenda. We're just having a good time. We're just talking. We're drinking. What are we drinking?
Iced tea.
That's pretty entertaining.
Jack Daniel's cinnamon.
Jack Daniel's cinnamon, and what Matthew Shepard said hell yes to.
Jack Daniel's and Coke.
There you go. Jack Daniel's and Coke. Okay. All right. So, JC, we have quite a bit of people in the room. The story that took the night for me was when somebody bought $45,000 in sex toys.
Yeah.
On a specific corporate card account. And I don't know. There were a lot of stories told tonight, but that one right there to me took the cake.
That wins for you?
That really does win for me because I got it. Not that I'm going to try it, but look, I'm an avid Amazon shopper, right?
And you have goals.
I do have goals, yes. I don't know if I have $45,000 worth of goals.
We could get there if we tried hard enough.
You know what? Just keep... Can I have another drink?
Where's the bottle?
That's good. But to me, the story to me that stood out was that one employee who bought $45,000 in sex toys. And the first thing that popped into my mind is, how is that shit delivered? How do you deliver that stuff?
Well, many boxes.
My first question was, what are you going to do with all that?
We got to crawl before you walk.
Yeah.
let's get to the delivery first, right?
Well, it sounds like he has a lot of holes to fill.
Plugging things go into the hole things. I mean, that's how that works.
Right? Matthew Shepard steps in.
Dildos and sex toys, I think, was the.
It did seem, when we reviewed the order, it did seem to be primarily dildos. Mm. So there were a few other oddities and objets. Dart, maybe? I don't know if you want to call them art objects in there, but there were. It was all sex related.
So, did you ever find out why he bought $45,000? Or was it a shame? I'm assuming. All right.
Yeah. So here's the funny thing. It was a husband and wife couple. The husband was the one responsible for everything, but as far as we knew. But their intent was to resell this. They were starting their own online sex store.
So they bought it wholesale?
Yes.
Okay. Was it at least American made?
So that's like $90,000.
We're doing the math here. Yeah.
That's only a 50% markup. So package it up in a nice satin box, and you can probably get triple for that.
Markup, yeah, right?
You sound really knowledgeable there, Adam. Are you sure this is not something you did? No, and you're trying to get some money up the side?
No moonlighting for me. I have more than enough fun with my day job.
The thing that makes me cringe is, how do people think this is okay? That's the thing.
And lie, bold face lie when they're in the middle of being caught with
it's crazy.
So wait, how'd you find out?
So we found out because they were delivered to his store. Like, they were delivered where he worked. Boxes upon boxes.
Wow.
So somebody opened it.
Somebody opened one of the boxes. Not, why are there, 15 boxes being delivered today? UPS guys making trips back and forth.
And somebody says, finally, the paper I ordered came in.
Yeah.
Opened it, and lo and behold, it was a lot of, wow.
They were decided to open a business to compete with Fairmella, huh?
Apparently.
He was going to go big time.
Hmm. Wow. So, okay. So
size matters in that industry.
Big time. You're close. Well, we just lost one.
We lost the singer. All right, so you caught the perp.
Yeah.
You went ahead and you conducted an investigation.
We did. We actually did. We did not make any assumptions up front.
So I'm curious on how this investigation went.
Caught the entrepreneur.
It was pretty open and shut, to be honest. I mean, this one was over in 24 hours, placed him on a suspension, and got his statement, and he at first denied everything up front, but when confronted with the evidence, which was pretty overwhelming, and we were able to pull the data out of the credit card agency, and he had ordered the material.
You turned him
on the company card.
Yes.
This is on the company card.
This is on the company credit card, yes.
And he starts a new business from the company card.
Yes. Well,
or she, or they, yeah. Or the group.
In this particular case, so our company credit cards, we actually, they're all personal liability cards. They are not actually on the company. The company opens it in your name. So it was all on him. Once we terminated him, we made it very clear to Bank of America that was not our charge.
And, and how's his business these days?
Yeah, I don't know. Bank of America, it becomes their dime to now fight with him.
You finish the investigation, you terminate the employee.
Absolutely.
What happened to all the merchandise?
We ended up returning it to...
$45,000 worth.
Yeah, so we returned it. I don't know how it played out with the credit card.
What's the return policy on those things?
Yeah, right? As long as they're still in their original packaging, I guess.
That's just gross.
I mean, you have to ask. You have to ask, right? So you returned it, right? Okay, so any issues with the return policy? Nothing at all, right? Okay, good. All right, so did the employee try to get their job back? Anything happen with that?
No, he was pretty... clear when he was terminated.
I mean,
he was marked as a do not rehire.
I figure that. Yeah. I figure that. So Leslie has a good point. I mean, it's amazing how people think that they can get away with stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
right. I mean, not even deliver it to the home, but to your place of business. Now, now wait a minute. Did the person who opened the first box get in trouble?
Because,
well, they opened a box that doesn't belong to them.
But it was a box that was addressed to someone and the company name.
So it.
The company name
on the shipping label, yes. Yeah.
So you know Amazon or whoever they bought it from was like, they're having a great time. Wow.
No, so, you might have thought applications might have spiked, but they didn't.
You know what? That's it. Well, I mean, one would think that maybe with the new up-and-coming employees and the millennials and the Gen Xers, you're just trying to attract more people, right? A new perk, right? A new benefit, right?
Yeah.
401ks, no. Some things for you to do at home, here you go.
Absolutely.
Right? Here we go. Perfect.
Hey, I got a question for you. So getting the police involved at work is definitely something that you don't have to do every day.
Right.
But when you cross that threshold for something that's happening in the workplace, what's some of the things you should keep in mind and or keep at the forefront of your investigation process as you head down that path?
Or whether to involve the authorities?
Once you have involved them or,
Well, it's, I mean, at least for me, we have to make a determination during the investigation, what is violated. Is it a company policy that's violated or is it a actual law that's violated?
All right, so is there like a law on the books of like maybe say where you park your running car?
So, yes.
In the middle of the parking lot.
Correct. So I guess you're talking about an instance that happened in a place where I was employed or am employed that'll stay out in the open for right now, where we had some three employees who decided to show up to the place of employment. And apparently these three employees were following another employee's Instagram account. And they were talking smack about each other's boyfriends. And anyway, long story short, the three former employees, I'll say that now, decided to wake up and hop in their car, come to the place of employment, open the door, find the person on break, and just proceeded to beat her up right there in the parking lot in front of everybody. Right? So when that is happening, obviously, not only is that a violation of
might be a little life policy, safety.
A little bit, right? So not only do you break some kind of workplace violence type of a policy, but now the authorities get involved. The authorities get involved. So anyway, the cops show up. As soon as I go outside, they recognize me. I'm the HR guy. They see me. They decided to bolt, and they decided to go back into the car that they got to the parking lot with, not knowing that they left the car running, keys in the car, but the doors were locked. And they were trying to break the window, trying to get into the car because they saw me. The cops showed up. They were dressed a little bit loose because they just woke up. There's all kinds of booty shorts and tank tops where you can see a lot of things. And they decided to leave, and one ran into the bushes. A couple ran over across the street. Cops show up. They go, because somebody called 911, and they go ahead and these three former employees get arrested. But to answer JC's question, that is a good question as far as you as an HR professional. What do you do at a point where you're conducting an investigation and you have to make a decision whether to get the authorities involved or not?
Yeah, I think, you know, I hate to say this, but typically it's the last thing you want to do. You know, I find...
The last thing?
Yeah.
Why?
Once the authorities become involved in an investigation, it's out of your hands at that point. Sometimes lawyers get involved a lot faster once police become involved. So for me, it's always... I try to have my case as wrapped up and closed up as I can before I would loop the authorities in, unless it's this life safety type situation,
I was gonna say,
right?
But it's to me, from my experience,
yeah.
You only get the authorities involved when there is a violation of the law that you
absolutely.
As an HR person don't govern.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
If you threaten somebody's life, nothing HR can do.
Right.
You have to get the authorities involved. There's ID theft. You have to get the authorities
yes.
involved. There's drug charges. Not only do you have to get the authorities involved, you may have to get the DEA or FBI involved.
But before you even go down that path, you have to verify the accusation, right? I mean, I'm not going to, every time an accusation is made to me that I saw somebody with white powder in the bathroom. How do I know what the heck that means until I investigate it a little bit? I mean,
Let's talk about that. I can't do
the drug testing, but I can drug test the employee.
Well, I was going to say, so how do you know? So how do you as an HR professional know that you're dealing with something that's illegal, like cocaine or anything like that?
You don't.
Because you got to call the cops,
yeah.
right? So you call them in.
Eventually, yes.
Right?
But
you get drug tested.
I have to verify
yeah.
that even happened, though. You know,
okay.
you have been in this business long enough, Ricky. You know that there's going to be employees that have a beef with each other.
Yeah.
You're not going to start picking up 911 every time somebody tattles.
No, you're right.
That,
you're right.
You know,
yeah.
Johnny saw Susie do such and such. It's always Johnny and Susie in my mind.
So what we're saying is our ethics training and our professional behavior training does not work.
That's right. Do you think that there's an ethical issue... not only with companies that are actually being pointed out in media, and then also ethical issues even with individuals.
Yeah, sure.
So my point is that do you think HR needs to actually have better training on company ethics, those that are actually even, you know, from media relations, those that are board of directors, those are the CEOs and CFOs, because in some ways, we don't really know. I don't know this person who had a company card. Mm-hmm. We really don't know who this person's title is. I don't know how far up this person is within the company.
This person was a line general manager out in the field. But I think ethics are important. I mean, we could have a long philosophical discussion about ethics in America today. I don't think the HR professionals are the problem with the ethics. It's having the employees understand the ethics and follow ethical practices and procedures. We're not going to see that in the average employee.
But for JC's question, it really is hard from an HR point of view on when we should contact the authorities. Because when we do, we got to make sure our shit is on point.
Absolutely.
Because if we don't, now we
have... look like the monkeys.
Not only that, we can get sued
yeah.
for libel, for slander.
Absolutely.
If we reasonably... If our reason for calling the cops didn't rise to the reason where a reasonable person will contact the authorities.
Correct.
If
Absolutely.
We do that prematurely, we can end up in trouble.
All right, here's a question for you. Outside looking in a little bit, a lot of people talk about this... And at what point do you get insurance for yourself as a HR professional?
Good question.
Compared to, you know, coverage through the company? At what point do you have concern or care about your personal indemnification or coverage?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. As soon as I rose to a director level position, I made sure I was named in the D&O coverage.
Mm.
You have to. And
yes,
for those of you that don't know, D&O is director and officer coverage. It's a type of liability insurance that employers take out to
mm-hmm.
cover their... employment practices and specific individuals that make those decisions. You know, when you are the person that the buck stops there, when you're mm-hmm. writing separation agreements, when you're, you know, making the final determinations, you better make sure you are covered. It's a great call out.
Yeah, people don't talk about that nearly enough.
No.
I don't know that enough HR leaders realize that is something they should be thinking about.
I think a lot of HR leaders, unfortunately, have not been savvy business people.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
And until, you know, HR wants that seat at the table, you're going to have to become a business professional, not yep. just an HR professional.
So here's a question. Where do you know the difference between what's a scam when it comes to some of these proposals for you to purchase this personal liability insurance for your position? What's a scam and what's legit? How do you weed that out?
I mean, shouldn't your company cover it?
Yeah, they right? should be. Your yeah. your employer should be taking yeah. this coverage, not you personally.
Yeah.
Because they're taking a blanket policy to cover all directors and officers.
As you're within an organization.
Yeah.
But if you're not, if you're that independent consultant, if you're someone yeah. from the outside firing in.
I'd be going to a reputable broker. I mean, you go to a Brown & Brown or a
John Hancock, Hiscox. Well, there's all sorts of organizations out there.
We got to send them a bill now.
The different liabilities. Yes. We'll be yeah. sending them a sponsorship agreement. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it is. You need to trust brokers that you know are in the business that do this. I mean, right. you don't take a cold call and buy that insurance over the phone.
So, correct. So, those are things that are necessary. But we have somebody here at this table who's an expert at making sure when people come to work, they're there for the right reasons mm-hmm. and they're there for the reason the organization exists, the culture, and whatever talent they have. And that's Mr. Craig. Mr. Craig Baez, he's my cousin, apparently, that I just found that out today. So from your point of view, what is it that employers can do to make sure that both their senior leaders, their employees, are focused only on the talent for which they were hired and nothing more? What is the one thing they can do to make sure that they're focusing on what they need to focus on at work? One thing. You're the man. You tell me. You're my cousin. You should know this.
What's the one thing they should focus on? Say that sentence again.
Say it again. Yeah. What's the one thing that employees and leaders should focus on? So when they get to work, that's the only thing they're focusing on. They're not worried about buying $45,000 worth of dildos. They're not worrying about beating other people up. They're focused on the reason the organization exists.
So like engagement, buy-in.
The vision.
Yes.
Mission, vision,
yes.
values.
Yeah, but coming from you, because I know this is what you do.
Yeah engagement.
Which is what?
Those statistics, which is what?
Yes.
I think it has to do with passion or what you do. Passion can go in strangely dark ways. That's another topic. No, I think I think passion is part of it. You have to get somebody in. It starts with selection. You get somebody that
there you go.
Get them in the door, and then, you know, there's that developmental piece, and, you know, you're developing somebody and you want them to be engaged.
So when you have a team of people there,
that takes time.
So when you have a team of people and you have, let's say, 25 people, right? 24 of them are engaged. They're there for the reason the company exists. They love what they do. But you have one talented employee who's just not engaged, who's not passionate. What do you say to that one person?
I think that's...
See ya. She's like, see ya. Goodbye.
You're dealing with, you're going to have some really crucial conversations with somebody.
Yeah.
And this is where you're coaching somebody. Maybe you're coaching them out.
I think it all comes from coaching the leaders of the company, managers. I think that managers are the ones that are going to create the retention. It's their responsibility to retain, to create that vision and that mission.
Oh,
and I think it's...
all heard a million times.
Yes,
you don't
hear it all the time.
You leave
but
manager,
I also
right?
think this. I think yeah, that the HR VPs need to become more engaged with the hiring managers and explaining a lot of those things and what's going on, because really at the end of the day, a lot of the issues in organizations for lawsuits come from hiring managers.
So what if a company doesn't work on an HRBP business partner model? They work on an old school model to where they're actually not partnering with the organization. They're there just recruiting. Or they're only focusing on what their piece of HR is instead of that model.
Yeah, I mean, the business partner model gets expensive, right?
It does, right.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I mean, I think...
Spoken like a true operations person.
Yeah.
That's where I started.
You're in expense.
Yes. So you know, I think it does go back to that selection point. We expect hiring managers to know how to select and hire these people, mm-hmm. and they don't. We don't train the managers right. how to do effective interviewing, how to do effective coaching, how to do effective counseling. It's as if we expect people to have magically picked this up on their own.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And business school That's doesn't teach point. That.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if you go to get a degree in finance, you are not going to learn those skills.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people actually, when they start to manage, they're thinking about how they were managed themselves before.
Yeah.
That is their role. Mm-hmm. That's sort of like their role model.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
that
right, that can, if that's a toxic mm-hmm. thing, they're going to just keep that toxicity keeping going. It's going to be passed along. And he's right. I mean, people leave organizations based on that relationship with their supervisor.
But I think it starts where Matthew's special place is, where Matthew really understands bringing people into the organization.
I think it's a crucial thing that you have, mm-hmm. Especially in a large HR. Where I'm at, there's over 100 people in HR.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a large recruiting team. That whole recruiting process, it needs to be seamless all the way through to when you have that first new employee orientation. But it can get siloed out. The recruiters just do their thing, and then the benefits people do their mm-hmm. thing. And that takes a lot of internal discipline to be able to pull those things together.
Well, it requires communication, right?
Communication.
Yeah. I mean, and nobody trust. Ever complained trust. That they got too much communication.
Right.
And if your departments are not communicating between each other, you know, if the recruiting team doesn't talk to the hiring managers, and if the hiring managers don't talk to the HR managers, and the circle goes round and round and round.
But you know what I noticed about this conversation is the, I don't know what the word, but I want to say circleness of it. Mm-hmm. It's not the word. I think there's a different word. But the fact that all of this is so connected, and I feel like sometimes, not necessarily us, because I think we get it and we talk about this stuff, but sometimes HR groups feel like they're in their own little silos,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they're not really understanding how to partner. And not every organization. No. I know a lot of us work in organizations that they get it, but they don't realize how the impact of their work, how it affects other pieces of the organization, and how that partnership piece is so interesting.
Do you think it's because there's some HR people who studied HR, and then once they graduated from university, they just started out in HR, and they have no other reality of what it would be like in a different business unit?
Oh, that's a whole...
Well,
that's
well,
a
wait, point is...
You don't be the ones to ask.
Yeah, it's a whole dialogue.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is. You mm-hmm. I have an HR person working for me who has never done anything. She went to Rollins.
Yay, Rollins!
Yes.
Hey, my class?
No, I don't know.
Okay, all right.
We'll see.
Make you sure.
And she has never done anything but HR. And when we talked to her about, you know, do you understand the business side of this, that the decisions have to always be weighed out, right? Yeah. There's what's good for the business, and there's what's, you know, maybe good for the employee. And you have to find that balance, right? And she can't understand the business side of it. And I think that Matthew is absolutely correct that the people in HR have got to get out there, and they have got to get themselves introduced to the finance team, to the accounting team,
true.
To the facilities, to the operations team. They've got to become a trusted partner, regardless of whether they're in a siloed or a business partner.
That's the word. That's the phrase
right
there.
Trusted partner. And that's what it's about.
I mean, you want them coming to you for advice, even when they think they already know the answer and they just want to bounce it off you. Those are the best calls to get, mm-hmm. right? Before something blows up into a nightmare when
right.
they're
a shit show.
Exactly.
Okay, let's just call it what it is.
Oh.
And that's something that I can say in my organization today that I do get.
Yeah.
That I do have, the reason I'm still there and I'm not out doing my own thing going crazy with it is because I do have great business partnerships. And it's one of those things that I do understand the business, and I happen to be somebody who understands the business that happens to know HR rather than an HR person who happens to know the business.
Right.
Right?
So and there is a difference.
There's a huge difference, yeah. right? Because if you go in from an HR point of view first, you start looking at whatever goal they try to hit, and you just try to pick at it and how many times or how many ways they can get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Instead of saying, let me figure out where you want to get to and let me help you get there with the least amount of issues possible, right, so we can get from A to B. But that's hard to find.
It is.
It really is hard to find.
It's that org design piece and the relationship management and the communication skills. I mean, look, this group is a pretty good communicative group, but I've sat in a room with 10 HR people that can't talk to you in a complete sentence. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, you have to be able to communicate effectively and powerfully and confidently, I think.
And I think, so it's really interesting. I've met a couple of people that are amazing HR folks recently that did not grow up in the HR world. They grew up in the operations world, where they had to be able to talk about the business. They had to be able to talk to leaders. Yeah. They had to be able to convey an opinion or whatever that was, a fact or whatever it is. And it's been really interesting to get to know these folks as HR professionals not coming up from that world. And it's impressive to have conversations because you can actually talk about the business and what's happening in the business and the long-term impacts on changes in the business. Just really interesting conversations. And not to put anyone down who's kind of grown up in the HR world, but I think it's a really interesting opportunity.
It is, and I tend to see the most successful HR people are the ones who started out in ops first.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It is, because they tend, look, the once you start in an organization, you have to be proficient and technical in what you do. Mm-hmm. But as you grow up in your career, in your organization, the higher up you go, the less technical you have to be and the more people-centric you have to become. So the more people-centric you become, the more HR-esque you become.
Yeah.
And that's what leadership is.
It's a great transition into human resources. And they're able to see how the business works, but more importantly, the talents that's required to make that business work and how to build those relationships and make that connection.
And connecting the dots.
Absolutely.
Between all of it.
But, so why is it so hard for people to grasp that?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if we put enough demands on them. I don't know if the education that the associations are doing, I don't know that the businesses are requiring enough of those conversations. I don't know the answer to that.
I think it becomes very political and red tape. And I think that we remove the politicalness and the red tape within regards as human capital, and we actually focus on just human centricity of people, then I think that a company like Zappos, a company like Netflix, where it's flat organizations rather than hierarchy, I find that those are probably more, especially for millennials and Gen Z, where they're actually wanting to do something and actually grow in that sense, compared to what we saw of, you know, the whole 1980s corporate sense.
So I've decided, speaking of millennials and Gen Zs, I've decided to change my generation. Oh. I've decided that instead of being at the edge of the baby boomer generation, I am a millennial.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
Let me know how that works out for you.
How does that work?
Age is just a number, but if you look at all the stereotypes.
But a number is a number.
Yes, it is a number. But if you look at, I'm doing the air quotes, so if you look at all the stereotypical stuff we talk about millennials.
Uh-huh.
And truthfully, I think millennials are amazing. The ones
they get
I
beat up a lot. They get beat
totally
up a lot.
They totally get beat up.
Yeah, they do.
It's like, these are the things that I want out of my career.
Okay.
I want to be challenged. Yep. I want to have flexibility. I want to have growth. Not so much positional growth, but I want to have personal and professional growth.
I got you.
I have no desire to be the CEO. Like,
I'm going to challenge you a little bit.
Please,
though,
go for it.
My personal experience, the millennials that I've worked with, they don't want to be challenged. Mm-hmm. As soon as they hit a challenge, they throw their hands up and they're done. Because that has been my experience time and again.
Or they're going to use sarcasm in that moment of heat to potentially diffuse and deflect
I have not found a millennial that can problem solve.
Really?
We're not teaching critical thinking skills and we're not teaching problem solving. It's not happening.
The people in that bracket that I have met, they're willing to take on those challenges. They do it in a different way than what we're used to. And when we see something different from what we would like to see, we tend to be afraid and kind of shun it off.
Okay.
So the people I have seen, they attack it. It's just not in a way where I would like to see it, which I have to be cognizant of that and then take a step back and like, let me see what he does. Let me see what he or she does and then attack it. Oh, then maybe I learned something. Or maybe I learned to me, that's an opportunity for me to teach them something because I let them fall, I let them scrape their knees, and I let them learn. But you're telling me that you have seen that is the opposite.
Yeah, wait. That's your perception or that's the reality of the situation?
That's what I have seen.
Our perception is our reality, is it not?
It is. So that, to me, that's my reality. That's why I'm eager to hear about your reality and yours and yours and yours to see what you have seen in that realm.
Yeah, I mean, my reality has been throw the hands up and come back to you with the same problem you handed him going, I don't know, I can't do it.
Gotcha.
It doesn't work. And
Matthew, yeah. Wants to say something.
What have you got?
Number one is the reduction of legacy systems. I think the legacy systems are pretty much the problem within typically the organization. That could be with banks, which is a problem.
Why don't you clarify a little what you mean by legacy systems?
The same way over and over and over and over and over again. The legacy system of doing the same thing that just relates to that same process, same way of thinking, same vision. You have to keep changing your vision of a company every 10 years in order to be relevant and to make more profitability to the organization. Yes, I'm going to ask you, here's the thing. Most companies today fail within 15 years after that because they go up and they go down. Typically, we're not seeing Louis Vuitton companies that we see that to me is more of a legacy system, but even Louis Vuitton, you know, we're now seeing that, you know, high priced items are not really in. Where I'm going with this is that we're seeing companies go, and typically most companies come and they go, and typically it's about 20 years or less. They start and then they fall. From a market, from a stock market sense, that's typically what it is.
I don't know, you're talking to some people who are working for companies that have been around for over 100 years, 47 years.
Okay. But let's say your company definitely, you know, obviously been around and look where it's at now.
Well, they evolve. I think companies evolve and change and companies, they can change their mission and their vision and their values entirely. I mean, a company can go from, you know, at one point maybe it was a food distribution network to a restaurant company and then morph into something else. I mean,
But do they change it as a response or do they change it proactively?
I think they react to the markets. Yeah.
All of them? I don't know if all of them do that.
No, if they don't, they fail. I mean, when a company doesn't react to the market, it fails.
It's all about budget.
But I think I don't understand quite where that was going with the generational thing.
Okay, I understand that. So that was from the legacy side to the generational side of it is I look at it as people are changing, society is changing, we are becoming a country that's more diverse. In the sense of that, where more diverse means that different types of people buy and purchase based upon where, how your upbringing is to things like that. So I think that just from an organizational level, from its people, yes, it comes from the recruitment efforts and selection process. But at the end of the day, the hiring manager is actually the one that actually makes that decision on hiring that individual for their team.
We already said that. I mean, we already have the skills to do that.
And they don't have the skills to do that. So I know that I'm repeating all of those things.
But that's the point, right? So with that being the problem, then what's the answer?
Fire everybody. Fire everyone. No, start over.
That's too much paperwork.
That's always our answer here, though, right?
Listen to Adam, though.
I think the answer, if you have an organization that is having issues with selection of candidates, that's where you need an L&D team that's going to come in and is going to train those hiring managers. I mean, L&D can have an amazing impact far outside of HR by sharing those skills.
Yep. All right, yeah. No, serious question. But L&D.
Learning and development.
I thought you meant Ellen DeGeneres. No. I'm sorry.
I love Ellen D. But,
because she's a baby boomer.
Ricky's cousin here
is
an L&D expert.
Yes, he is.
I want to talk about this. Leslie said about the generational thing.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I know about it, it's not a whole lot. You can be one generation, but you can have characteristics and wants in another generation. But here's another thing. I heard somebody talk one time, those generational categories are for marketing.
Right.
What if we got rid of those?
I'm all in for getting rid of those. of those, because I mean, it's all about
stereotypes, right?
It's exactly. Constantly do we want to be stereotypes?
Put people into we put people in a category.
We should be anyway.
Yes. So wait a minute, Leslie. Didn't we have a Disrupt HR event where somebody did a talk about how labeling people with their generational labels mm-hmm. is something that only America does? That it doesn't happen in Japan, it doesn't happen in Europe, this is only mm-hmm. something that happens in the United States, right? Didn't we have, wasn't that the Structure Charlotte 3.0, 2.0?
Three or four.
It was
four,
the UCF in downtown.
Oh, that was
because that one yeah. really stuck with me.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how they stick with you? It's and yeah, so right on, thank you for remembering that.
Is that a real thing, though?
What?
Is that a real thing?
It was,
that no other country in the world stereotypes based on age?
I don't know the answer.
Antarctica, Russia.
We can't verify that.
The question is that are there advertising and marketing firms in those countries?
Yes,
there
are.
And there you go. So that's why we have market demographics in order for companies to sell products and services to a generation.
From a cultural standpoint, if you can bust down that. Because as a human being, I want to be treated just like everybody else there, right?
High five, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have to say...
That's my cousin.
When the whole generation topic comes up, I kind of start tuning out.
I'm with you.
I have to tell you, I don't give a what your age is. What I care about is what you produce.
Results. Yes. And yeah, I had this conversation with a group of leaders. Oh, just last week. It was amazing. We were doing a group coaching session and had been talking about generations. And we came back to it. And I said, I don't care if I ever talk about generations again, because my parents didn't understand me. Their parents didn't understand them. And that's okay. But
this
point
is the age-old song.
We
right?
are all people. And if you treat people in a way that impacts them, age does not matter. It's
Agreed.
About understanding
Agreed.
What people want, what people need, who they are, what their desires are. And the only way we do that is by having a conversation as a leader, whether we're a positional leader or a leader with influence. It's about understanding what our people want and what they need and who they are. Okay, so I'm getting off my soapbox.
Is this something that we need to probably train hiring managers so that they actually hire someone that may be 65 or 70 years old who actually may think like a millennial, but actually be, you know...
But again, stop using the label.
Yeah.
Stop using the label. It's,
and why use age?
What's the difference between that label and saying black, Hispanic...
Yep.
Catholic.
Muslim. Yes. Right. Exactly.
Get rid of the damn labels.
I'm always
talking about it.
Great. Then you know what? Then let's go ahead and take it off the application process as well.
We do. It's not on the application process.
Well, some people still have an application process of what race are you?
Or right. they're
that's
looking.
Well, that's different.
That's an EEO-1.
My point is.
No. Hold on. Wait a minute. Mr. Reuter.
Let's be clear.
Because the EEO-1 statement is at the end of an application.
It is voluntary.
And it is voluntary.
Yes, I know.
And it is anonymous.
Well, then, my point is if you don't have
any
labels,
manager never
let's
sees
take it off. Let's take the label off the application.
Don't look at me with the air quotes on anonymous. I run the systems.
I'm not in this.
The hiring manager doesn't have access to it. There's usually maybe five people in a company that even have access to that data. It doesn't... So,
I mean,
get that out of your head.
I know why we have it, but I understand what you're saying, though. But I know why we have it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's for EEO purposes.
The law says we have it.
Yeah, I know.
It could be even OFCCP purposes.
So, but at the end of the day,
how many veterans do you have to hire in your company? Does it really matter? I don't care if you're a veteran or non-veteran. I'm going to hire you because based upon your talents and your mentalness. I don't care if you're a veteran or non-veteran.
You only have to ask veteran questions.
So let's take if I'm a veteran or not a veteran off the application process. Because obviously we're labeling people by, okay, if I'm filling out an application and I'm a veteran, I know full well that I'm going to move up to the top compared to someone who's a non-veteran where I'm black.
You're not. You're not going to move up to the top.
Oh, yeah. He's Matthew and he's not black.
You're not.
You're not black. Doesn't matter. It's not just anything wrong.
You are not moving up to the top by checking those boxes. Those boxes.
Some organizations you are.
But those boxes, how, Leslie? Because if that organization is doing that, the boxes are anonymized to the hiring manager. The recruiter can talk to somebody and see their background and discuss their military service, but it is not the checking the box for the vet statement that is moving somebody to the top.
No, some organizations.
No, I see what he's saying.
Hold on. Let's be clear. These boxes that people are checking, they are not going to hiring managers. If any one of you is allowing that to happen, you got a problem
in
your organization.
You're 100%
right. So really what we're trying to say here, the laws need to change.
No.
Because the laws that are creating the labels based upon who we are as a people for an organization.
Well, I agree with that. I agree.
Look, I personally don't give a whether or not we report out on EEO stuff. The EEO is going to still exist and they're going to still...
They are, but do you really think that today, the reason EEO exists today is for the same reason that it existed in the early 60s?
No, I think it has more relevance today.
You really think so?
Absolutely.
You don't think that we have evolved a little bit more in humanity to be more accepting than what we were in the early 1960s?
No, I think it's behind closed doors and closeted now. And not out in the main street. Really? I think those decisions are made in boardrooms every day. With it, why do you think the first thing I coach anybody is do not put your damn picture or your address on your resume?
Unless you are from overseas, matriculating to American society, and it's part of your culture, and that's what you grew up with, though. There are some countries in Asia where this is a standard practice.
But
it really is.
If you want a job in America, don't participate in your culture from your past country.
So wait, I have to disagree with you, Adam. I have to.
See, you can
absolutely. Here's why.
But I think you might be living in a bubble then, Ricky.
I get it. Today, it is more hidden than what it was back then. I agree with you 100%. I also believe there's more people today that are more accepting to those things that 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago was more of a little bit taboo.
But 40, 50, 60 years ago, it was black versus white. Mm-hmm. Today, we have Hispanics that are marginalized. We have gays that are marginalized, mm-hmm. transgender people that are marginalized. Mm-hmm. And the EEO
and
is responsible for all of those. And still the black and white.
I got you.
I think that's where it's more relevant today. I think we have more issues with equal opportunity than the old just dichotomy of black and white.
So you think the law is needed more now than what it was back in 1965?
I do. I think the law is needed even more to protect more people. Mm-hmm. I think that especially in the last few years in this culture in America, with ism coming in, it is acceptable.
Here we go.
It's become acceptable to discriminate.
I think what have we been recording for how long now? And we're good.
I said ism.
No, I got you.
It's become acceptable to hate people. Uh-huh. So it only becomes more important to have laws to protect those people.
It seems Matthew has something to say in regards to that.
Do you think that the media has created the ism to create that divide rather than, let's say, Trump, really? My point is that maybe there is a social media marketing standpoint.
If
that
Trump
actually
never opened
that.
His mouth, then I would say so. But the idiot stands up there every day and says some asinine...
But you also have a very far left saying that, you know what, they want to... You also have the far left wanting to throw their beliefs and their systems on
the
very
not
far
covering.
Right.
That's
my point. We need to have more of that voice for both sides rather than just Fox and CNN.
I'm sorry. I really have a hard time believing that the laws that were needed back in 1964 are needed even more now, because I do believe that as humans evolve, as generations evolve, they become more understanding. So to me, from what I have seen at least, now of course I'm looking into Ricky Bias's eyes, mm-hmm. nobody else's. From what I have seen, and I might be naive, I might not, more people are becoming more understanding. Therefore, as generations go on, as they chip away at that racist block, as that block, you're able to need that law even less.
Tell that to the kid who came out to their parents as transgender and got kicked out of their house.
Right.
And lived
I got
on the
you.
Street.
I got you.
Tell that to the kid.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I'll ask you this. The bakery.
The bakery?
The bakery who refused to do the cake. Right?
Okay.
Yes.
So, okay. So from my point of view,
if
I went to a bakery that didn't like Puerto Ricans, I'm Puerto Rican, in case anybody didn't know. Craig knows because he's my cousin.
Craig.
Right?
So, but he's your Cuban cousin.
He's my Cuban cousin, right?
See.
If I went to a bakery and that bakery didn't want to make a cake for me because I'm Puerto Rican, mm-hmm. I'm just going to go somewhere else.
And I think most people would.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So I'll go somewhere else. And in my opinion, I believe that people today would follow that mentality, that if you believe that you shouldn't make a cake for whatever reason for somebody, then let the market dictate.
So you're a complete free market theorist? Do we really want to go down the economic path here?
Let's go ahead and go. Let's go ahead and go. Now, that would not have worked 50 years ago.
Sure, I think, why not?
I think now it would work.
Your same dictate follows. 50 years ago, if I was a black man, walked in.
That theory did happen.
But that's right.
It did happen, though.
That's right. And it was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And you're saying you believe that that's acceptable for that business owner to discriminate.
And my point is that if you've developed an organization.
What you end up with, though, hold on. What you end up with is you have the haves and the have-nots. Uh-huh. In your theory, in your world, the market doesn't dictate. It's that business owner gets to say, no, I won't. You go to someplace else. And I'm going to tell you, if you allow that to continue, you'll get more places dictating no than more places accepting yes.
I think the opposite. I think the way generations are today, they're more acceptable of things that are different than what they are.
Oh, and I think you're naive, believe, Ricky. I think
you think
human,
so?
Yeah, human you nature really is so? Human nature is to like self.
Oh
no!
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Symmetry. I have an observation. Went to a meeting probably 8 or 9 months ago. And before my meeting, I thought, I'm going to go grab lunch. Yeah. So I went to a restaurant, sitting there by myself, having lunch, having this salad, and looking for... Yeah, it was really good. It was a steak salad. It was amazing. I could think about it at the moment. It's really good. But the point is, I looked around the restaurant and started looking at the groups of people at the tables. And there was a group of Indian folks together. It's a group of black folks together. A group of white men together. A group of women together. And the only group that was mixed at the table was a group that was obviously having a business meeting because they had the PowerPoint presentation and they were going through it together. And it was so interesting to me to sit there and to watch folks enjoy their lunch, having a great, seemingly all having a great time. And I started thinking about their comfort or their like.
Yeah.
And it was this interesting observation. I don't know where this goes, but it was one of those things that I hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about until that day.
BBC World Service just did a podcast on symmetry and that we are symmetrical.
Yes.
And that we will always be attracted to symmetry.
Yes.
We won't even know that it's what we're being attracted. Yeah. It's inherent in us as I guess primates, because they've found the same thing in nature with apes and so on and so forth. Okay. That natural symmetry will be attractive and pleasing to us. Sure. Disharmony is always going to be rated low. And they did all these tests.
Sure.
And the same thing applied across human beings. You tend to select a spouse that is going to have some symmetry to you, that has commonality. Human beings are always going to seek commonality. Sometimes the only diversity they see in their life is in the workplace.
Right.
Because they go to church with people that are like them. They are at home with people that are like them. Really?
I disagree.
Real quick, just outside looking in on this one, in regards to the symmetry of nature in general, though.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned it in the way that you did. When you talk about the natural symmetry of the world compared to, and I'm going to kind of go to a weird place, but
yeah,
I'm
weird.
A weird dude.
Weird.
So,
yeah.
Like, if you take a look at the Fibonacci sequence and the standard mathematical repetitions of things, and then the constant evolution going from square 1 to square x2 to the power of 15, and the way that progression happens. Yeah, there may be a natural symmetry that kicked things off at the first start, but it's that constant evolution that then creates that magical piece from that high center. So yes, and at the core of what could be considered that inherent primate ability, if the evolution concept is something that you believe in, great. Mm-hmm. If you're the ancient alien theorist, well, then maybe it's coming directly from a genetical coding of some sort from a higher power being, and let that be God or someone in between, to which symmetry can't necessarily be defined. But I don't know. I'm kind of going to a mathematical route on a different path. But still, there's that equation between that positive, the negative, the left and the right, the making sure that everything is crystal clear, and that natural inherent connection.
Yeah.
But I do tend to think that there's more that compounds upon that, that goes into the true nature of who we are, and on how we build from square one to where we are at the end of that spiral, if that spiral ever ends.
Okay.
Yeah, I just went to a real weird spot. I told you I was gonna, so.
Adam's looking up.
The guy that did this talk and did this research also explained that it doesn't just happen in primates, though it happens across all the natural world. And the Darwin theory of only evolutionary positive changes will play out was proven incorrect. When you look at the peacock is the prime example used. Humans find peacocks aesthetically pleasing, yes. Right?
Sure.
And peacocks have a very symmetrical tail. That tail, evolutionarily, has absolutely no purpose other than to attract a mate. And it actually inhibits the flight of the bird, and it actually inhibits the ability of the bird to defend itself. But that display of that beautiful symmetry of that tail that is perfect from side to side is what attracts its mate and allows for the species to continue evolutionarily. So it's not about just what is the thing that is going to help the species advance and move on to the next evolutionary step. It's sometimes just about what will allow the species to perpetuate, period.
From a business standpoint, if you have everybody in the same room with the same that looks alike, smells alike, acts alike, same education,
you get a lot of yes men.
You're gonna, yeah,
what are you going to learn
from a business? Yeah, right.
What are you learn?
Diversity is not a bad thing.
No, and I think that's circling right back around to the conversation where I think that those protections that are inherent in the law are even more essential now today, because if we don't protect the diversity in the workplace, we will not have diversity inherently in culture.
You want can't we just robots? get rid of culture?
No.
Get
why?
Rid of the labels.
Why
get rid of. I'm all.
Hey, you know what? He's putting a thought out there. I'm asking.
Why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
So you want no more art?
Because
you
I
want no more.
No. I'm not talking about culture. I guess what I'm trying to say is getting rid of organizational culture. Taking organization.
Can you get rid of organizational culture? Or will the organizational create itself?
No, because
it'll always create itself.
Yeah. But groupthink, thank you, is that's the big problem. So,
but I think you have to have, in order for an organization to survive, it has to have a vision.
Yes.
It has to have a mission.
Yes.
So, and therefore you have a culture. The moment you create a mission and a vision, you are going...
Unless you don't live that mission.
But at the end of the day...
Well, but then you won't survive.
At the end of the day, it's going to be those who actually put up the money, the accredited investors, the CEO of the company, the board of directors.
No, it's not the accredited investors. They put up the money, but they don't have the say in creating the mission and the vision of the company. It's going to be that entrepreneur, that CEO. And let's face it, most of the entrepreneurs who end up trying to run their own company fail miserably. There's a big difference between being an entrepreneur that starts an organization and then one that can actually run one long term.
Yes, 100% right.
And the entrepreneurs do not belong running the company. They should go on and start something else.
So is it time for Mark Zuckerberg to move on?
Oh,
yes. Go ahead.
Yeah,
what was that?
Star Singer. How do you really feel?
Yeah, nobody's ever, nobody's ever not clear on my feelings on the topic.
But it's interesting, kind of going back to that. I'm going to go back to symmetry. We may have moved on, but I stepped away for a moment. Going back to symmetry, it's interesting to think about in the recruiting world when we have people refer other people for jobs. We're in such a tight job market right now. It's hard to find
under
good 2% people.
In some
right. And so we ask our employees to refer people to jobs.
Yeah.
But if they're a... Can I say that?
Yeah.
Okay,
really?
Cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, out there.
There you go. Go ahead.
Is that better? Are we actually going to look at that referral?
Well, absolutely. I think referral programs inherently have their own problems. Mm-hmm. Are you going to just bring in more like-minded people?
People that don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an issue that you... If you are a competent director of recruiting and a competent recruiting team, you're going to think through those issues.
Yep.
And you're going to evaluate, do I accept the referral from Johnny or do I not accept the referral right. from Johnny? And there is, I believe there should never be any such thing as a courtesy interview.
No offense to people named Johnny out in the audience.
Right, of course.
But it, I think
hey,
you
I'm,
look
I'm,
at...
I like
you don't, so you don't like Johnny. So you don't think so from a referral sense that a recruiter should screen a candidate that was referred to...
Automatically, no.
Somewhat
if you look at the resume of this person and you go, this does not apply,
does
or I see too many red flags that I would never have interviewed this person if I got this resume cold. Then you should not interview them just because they're a referral. Referrals are just a way to bring more candidates into your pipe stream, but they shouldn't automatically escalate a candidate in that pipe stream.
Well, unless they're related to a senior executive, right?
Of absolutely not. Nepotism.
Nepotism
no.
is alive and well.
Oh, dear God.
So is nepotism...
The basketball guy.
Is nepotism... Holy... Oof.
Even in our own company.
Is nepotism more behind closed doors than some of the other things you're talking about earlier?
I don't know. I think organizations have done a fairly decent job with nepotism. I think it's been stomped out in a lot of places.
So you think people have evolved from nepotism to be less of it, but not in all the other aspects which where EEO is required?
Yeah, and here's why. Because I think people... I think most people are more afraid of bringing a relative on board. But in nepotism, let's be clear. I don't know what you want to term nepotism. I think of nepotism as husband and wife or, you know, wife and wife, husband
right,
and husband.
Right. Yeah.
Or child, yes, yeah. child and parent. I'm not considering nepotism if it's your second cousin once removed
right.
or your best friend that you grew up with.
Gotcha.
So I've seen people call that nepotism. At that point, I don't feel it is. It's when it's that immediate family member.
Okay.
Right?
Gotcha.
The nuclear family.
Yeah.
That's where I see the nepotism issue has pretty well been squashed because I just don't see people being willing to take that risk. There's too many people that know nepotism's a bad thing and nobody's going to be able to hide that I brought my son in as a junior partner or something.
Gotcha.
Unless it's a family business and that's...
Totally different story.
Exactly.
A little earlier on today, Matthew and I were having a great discussion that he touched on just a little while ago. It was kind of a radical thing, and a lot of people in the room just did cast it aside real quick. But we do need to center back on this because we're touching on a topic that is the root of a lot of what we talk about. You know, we've had so many different people on from the HR sector across the board, okay? But at the end of the day, what is the root? Where are we driving from? Matthew, you had a few ideas on that.
I think that one topic that we talked about was culture, right? From applications, like reducing those labels and taking those off of the applications. I think that when you're always applying for a specific position, I think that every time I apply, I feel like I'm weeded out based upon my race, maybe. I mean, I look at it from that perspective. I don't know, when you apply, you know, okay, I'm not a veteran, to figure that out. Okay, let's say I may have PTSD. I'm not going to put that on there as a disability, right? So a lot of people are afraid of all those kind of things.
Then decline to answer.
Right?
Check box
my point
for
is,
that
is
on
that
every one of those questions.
We're creating labels, but where I'm going with this is as if we're going to create, like, I believe in, okay, I understand you guys have this viewpoint of organizational culture. Where I'm going with this is that why do we really have to have one? And if we do have to have one, for example, let's bring up Hobby Lobby.
Okay.
Hobby Lobby is a sort of example where, you know, a lot of the people want, you know, most of the people are more evangelical. They don't really want to have, you know, they don't want to really promote homosexuality, you know,
okay.
or same sex or
yeah.
LGBTI groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's their organizational culture. That's their belief. And that's their faith. You know, they build products towards their, you know, it doesn't matter. People can buy them. But organizationally, you know, they may not want to have someone who is gay in their organization.
Okay.
And at the same time, you know, who says it's right or wrong?
And if they wanted to be a religion, more power to them. If they felt that that was what was important to them, was preaching hatred of others as part of their religion, go for it. When you want to operate a business and you want to operate within the greater society and culture of America, you don't get to preach hatred to your
yeah.
employees. You do yeah. not get to
but who
institutionalize.
Says they're preaching hatred?
Right. You do not get to institutionalize bigotry and homophobia
yep.
in your organization as and call it in the safety of my beliefs and my religion. if you really want to, this is not going to be a popular topic, but
out there.
Religion is the root of all evil in the world. Organized religion is a construct of man, and as long as you have religion that is led by man, you will have evil, and that religion will perpetuate evil because all religion preaches hatred of someone else. And they package it in a nice little thing of we love everybody except those people.
And that's why CNN just had a great article today about the fact that over 50% of our population in the U.S. today now puts their religious preference as none.
So I'm jumping in on that one because I am big.
I got to go back to Hobby Lobby and talk about women. I am big in that one. About Hobby Lobby.
So here's the thing. I'm with you 100%, Adam. Really am. But I also know that I've got some family members, right, that they use religion for good.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. They do. Definitely.
They use it for good. Now, I have seen some other people who use it as a tool for evil as well.
To spread hatred.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%.
Yep.
So for the people who use it as a tool to help other people, more power to you.
But they could help those same people without the guise of religion.
You're right.
And you can be a good person without the guise of religion.
I agree.
But religion protects people that want to spread hatred and evil.
I got you.
All right. I've got a question for everyone here, kind of going off of what you were saying, Matthew, is that take for instance a organization or a business that's establishing their brand that may be, and if I say it incorrect, please correct me, LGBTQIAAPK, and if you're establishing your brand or organization, and this is the root of who you are within your brand, and then you find someone coming from, say, stereotypically, the construction world. That's an amazing salesperson. They are the most qualified candidate out there that's going to help you make money with that brand. Where do you draw that line between brand reinforcement, your behind-the-doors, closed, prejudice in a way, and what is actually going to be best for the business? Bringing someone in, because at the end of the day, what do we have?
Is it
the driving force? What's the driving force, Matthew?
Profit.
What's the driving force?
Money.
It's about, correct. It's about, at the end of the day, it's about the profit. And so the question is that how can we actually show that HR can be shown as a profit center rather than a cost center? Because at the end of the day, a lot of the CEOs and a lot of the financial people, they don't really look at as part of that business unit.
I think this is an old argument, though.
I know it's an old argument.
20 years ago, and we've proven it out. Where we're a profit center is by protecting the company from the stupid that the CEO wants to do.
Okay, if that's the case, then why did you hire lawyers rather than just HR professionals?
Because lawyers are too expensive. I can hire 5 HR people to protect the company instead of one lawyer.
That's a good point. It is.
I mean, it that's the reality of it. I mean, we still go and consult an attorney when it goes into deep law stuff. But an HR professional can protect the company from its own idiocy 9 times out of 10.
Why doesn't human resources work with brand managers in a way to specifically devote to a specific brand and hire long brand lines for the sake of a profit margin? Due to the
interestingly
need to follow
seasons 52? Did just that. Seasons 52 hired along brand guidelines and hired only 20 and 30 something clean cut.
They got sued
white,
for that.
Very pretty. Did. And they settled a very large lawsuit for that. So that's why you don't let marketing make hiring decisions, because it isn't about, you cannot operate under a philosophy of we're only going to hire certain people. You're going to stifle creativity.
Yep.
B, you're going to stifle problem solving.
But do you think it's stifling profitability?
I think you have to. No, I don't think it is, because
but if Seasons 52 were hiring just all pretty people,
and
knowing full well that I was, let's say I'm the CEO, or
well, who determines what's pretty?
It doesn't really matter. My point is,
it does. It certainly does.
Hold on. I see both sides, but my point is that if Season 52 was making a profit, and then of course the EEOC came in and say, you know what? No, you can't do this because obviously this was obviously illegal, because all you're hiring is pretty people and it's very discriminatory, but knowing full well that company's making profit and creating jobs and making profit for
investors for the 401k plan or for their...
But you have to make profit within the bounds of the law.
Yeah, absolutely.
Profit for pure profit's sake will drive us down the path of medieval feudalism.
I mean, isn't that what how Pablo Escobar got big?
I was going to say, damn, he made a lot of money.
He has. He really did. I mean, do you know watch Narcos on Netflix?
But come on, dude. You can make a profit and make it legally. You may be able to make a larger profit illegally.
Yeah.
That doesn't make it right. Because if we really want to go down the path that money is the only object and the only thing that a business is there for, I mean, that is the only thing a business is there for is to make money. But you have to make the money within the bounds of the law.
Yes, I agree.
And that goes back to where I think the EEOC and the Equal Employment Opportunity laws are just as relevant today. Because if you remove those safeguards, the market will only dictate what is most profitable. And you will always end up with people that are willing to make the decision that will be the most profitable will gain the position of power in an organization. And they will operate under those constraints.
But you talk about power, but don't you think that an organization is about power and profitability? Being on the Fortune 500 company? And isn't that what every company wants?
No, I don't think every company does want to grow to be a Fortune 500 company.
Well, just being tradable on the stock exchange.
No, I don't think every company does want to be.
You don't think so?
No, absolutely not.
Then what's the point of making a profit?
Because you can own and operate your own business and be perfectly happy and content operating Joe's Hardware Store. Not that that exists anymore.
What if you
want
to raise more money in order to actually help fund your idea or fund making more business?
You're thinking like an entrepreneur, and there will always be entrepreneurs. But I don't think that every organization's goal is to end up on the New York Stock Exchange.
That may not be, but why are we always talking about consistent growth? Growth, growth. Growth.
Because if you don't have growth, then you won't continue to have profitability.
Is that right?
Well,
right?
Yeah, no. Okay, let me clarify.
Okay.
I think it depends what your business model is and what you're doing and selling, right? If you are looking to be a large organization, or if you are already a large organization, yes, you've crossed into that boundary.
Okay.
But we also talk about in America that the vast majority of employment is done by small employers, not by large organizations. Okay? Those small employers that don't even have an HR department, they have to follow the same laws for the most part. They may not have to follow FMLA if they don't have 50 employees. But we have all these different caveats. But those small employers, they're the ones that probably need the accountability the most because they don't have a company culture. Because their company culture is Joe the Plumber's belief system. And if you remove all of those protections, Joe the Plumber will run his company the way his pastor tells him to.
Not
every Joe the Plumber believes that way. Not everyone. Please stop me if I'm wrong. So what you're saying is that every small organization runs on that small mentality. I get that. But at some point, the reason they're running is to make the big time, right?
No, I don't.
They're not?
No, I disagree.
What's the point of profitability then?
But I think there are plenty of organizations out there, and we'll go back to Joe the Plumber, that he runs his plumbing business for him and his family. And when Joe the Plumber retires, if his kid didn't go into plumbing with him, he's going to close up shop. He may sell off the brand or the business. He might sell it to the bigger plumber conglomerate in town. But it was the purpose for Joe the Plumber was to have a living and build up a retirement for himself and his wife. And he did that and he moved on. I think that is the majority of small business owners. Not every small business owner is looking to become the next Amazon or the next eBay or the next Google.
Well, that's an exaggeration. But they all want to grow.
If you're an entrepreneur, what you want to do is you want to grow, and then you want to sell your
business.
That's
if you are an entrepreneur.
Even if you have an idea and a business, you're going to want to sell that to a larger company because that's going to provide you with cash flow for retirement or start a whole new business.
This goes back to the conversation Ricky and I had earlier today, that you are operating at a level of talking about people that are above average IQ, and that those are above average people. The average person
plus the 50% of the population that is below average, they are not operating on the level that you're talking about.
Yeah, he's
so,
right.
So let's just say I'm Michaels, and you know what? I'm going to go ahead and buy Hobby Lobby.
But Mike, you're talking about a gigantic organization.
Michaels, buy Hobby Lobby.
You're talking about a gigantic organization. You're not talking about the small business owner. You're not talking about Joe the plumber. When you have the huge organization already that goes out and buys another huge organization, absolutely their only goal is profit. And they are going to continue to grow and drive same store sales have to increase, or they're going to close that store, or they're going to move it, or they're going to drive marketing dollars to it. And they're going to target certain segments of the population that they think have a growth potential. That's a large organization, and some of us work in large organizations, but those of us that have worked in a small organization, they're not even thinking along those lines. If you've got one restaurant, you're not thinking about trying to trump same store sales last year. You're trying to think about, how am I going to pay my bills next month, keep my employees employed?
But wouldn't it be better if they're able to move their organization in a position to where they don't have to worry about that week by week?
Okay, and what is going to give them that? Removing all legal protections?
No, but moving to that next level, right?
Yeah.
So they want to grow to be bigger. Not necessarily to the likes of Amazon or Apple, yeah, or all these big organizations, but bigots from where they are today to where they don't have to worry about what their next paycheck is coming from every other week, right?
And I'm going to tell you, I think there are a lot of business owners, small business owners out there that are not like that. I think they are
Like what?
They want to continue to grow. I think they will. They are happy owning their one restaurant.
Because they don't want to, or because they don't know that next step is out there?
I think it's because they don't want it.
Or is it because they don't know how to raise money?
Hold on.
Because
I just want to check out this.
Growth comes with responsibility. And there, it does come a level where people say, I'm good with this. I don't want more responsibility. We've seen it in our careers.
I got you. Okay.
You get a manager that gets to a point and they go, shit, I do not want to be a director. I don't want to be a VP.
Right.
I've hit that point that this is good. I don't want longer hours. I don't want crazier schedule. I don't want more responsibility that now I am not responsible for 50 people's lives. I'm responsible for 150 people's lives. There are plenty of people out there that don't want that. Now, the people sitting around this table are all driven professionals. We have to remember to not apply our thought process to everyone in an organization.
Agreed.
Belief system to everybody in an organization.
I'm with you there. I don't think anybody in this table is going to dispute you on that.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Now, where do we go from here?
I got another high five. Just want that on the record.
I have to say, I'm really enjoying this dialogue tonight.
It's challenging. Both of you, all three of you, have to come back on
the
show.
Are there going
to
be two bottles of Jack Daniels included on the next?
No.
Hey, I did this on iced tea alone, thank you.
So you're just straight up on iced tea.
Yeah. Totally.
Can you imagine if we had Tito's vodka with
him? I'm stocking up next time. When are you coming back, JC?
hopefully as soon as possible.
ASAP. Wow.
Hey, so Matthew had a point there as the two of you were going back and forth, and I do just want to touch back upon that. Because I know you're reserving a few things, that you've got some thoughts on this topic as well. But you said, with that business owner, maybe it's the fact that they don't know how to make profit is where you started to chime in.
I don't think they know how to make profit. I just don't think they know how to go about in raising money in order to actually build the company
to raise
that growth. Yeah,
yeah, that growth. And so I loved how you brought up, you know, we keep talking about growth and metrics, and you know, if you don't have metrics and growth, even if as a small business owner, mm-hmm, it's kind of like there's no point. What's the point of being like?
Again, though, I think you're applying your experience and your thought process to another person's situation, and you have to be able to put yourself in their shoes.
I understand that, but if you have like maybe two or three employees, those two or three employees are going to want to have merit increases.
Right, but metrics and growth are two separate things.
So it costs money to pay your great employees who are sales or support or operations in order to make that happen.
So
I think most small business owners actually are very good about taking care of their employees because they do know that their business depends solely upon them. Hold on, Ricky's giving me the dirtiest look in the world right now. Hold on. But I think because brought up about giving people raises and this and that. Matthew brought up about giving people raises. I think the small business owner is more likely to take care of his employees in the sense of giving them a raise once they're already employed. Doesn't talk about the EEO piece of it. He hired these people most likely already.
For their talents. Yeah. Because they do a good job.
Depends, yes.
Okay, all right.
So, again, I think the small business owner is less concerned with taking more and more profit for himself. He will often put money back into his business.
Yeah.
He'll take care of his employees. And I'm using he, it could be her, it could be whatever, they. It's the larger the organization grows, the more profit becomes king. And profit will be pulled into the company and will be funneled to the higher echelons of the organization. And the smaller people do get forgotten in merit increases.
That's interesting.
Or there's we'll give 3% to the people. But I'm taking a 10% increase as a CEO of a company year over year over year. And we've seen that disparity happen and that widening of the pay gap in large organizations. You go to a small mom-and-pop place, they don't have that massive disparity of pay. You know, a plumber is happy if he's making 100 grand a year for himself, and he's paying his plumbers 50 grand a year. Unless
he or she sees an opportunity for a bigger cut of the pie.
Yeah,
I don't always agree with that, Ricky. I think a small business owner is much more in tune with their individual community in that sense. They're not.
But is that because they don't see what the opportunity is, or because they see what the opportunity is and they choose to stay where they are?
I think there's a bit of both. I don't know. We'd have to find out. Get a sociologist to probably study that.
Yeah, research there, because I think it's too much of a generalization.
Yeah,
I think there's greed happening.
Absolutely,
all over the place.
I'm with you there.
Yeah,
I am. But
yeah, it's an interesting conversation, though.
I will tell you, I think greed happens at a far greater clip in a larger organization where greed becomes rewarded in a larger organization more so than in a smaller.
And we saw that a lot in the 80s. And I think it's still happening. I don't think we talk about it nearly enough.
No. And I mean, it still happens today on Wall Street.
It's going to be the next collapse that will bring that out.
Well, we also saw that in the early 2000s
exactly.
as well.
Yeah.
It was rewarded for those people.
Oh, it's happened several times.
And it will be the
student
next. Student loan debt will be the next one.
Oh, that's a whole
universities.
Other discussion.
There will come a tipping point on the student loan debt where they can't put the whole world into jail for student loan debt. I mean, there will come a tipping point, and the Betsy DeVosses of the world will be left holding the paper paycheck.
If only.
Wait, hold on. She's no longer. We have a new person.
Did she?
Betsy's gone? No.
Betsy's gone. There's, you know what? No.
No, what? Betsy's gone.
No, I was going to say, you just had a five people.
I'm Googling that. It's not Betsy. It's Homeland's gone.
Yeah, Homeland lost.
Yeah, Homeland is gone, not education.
Betsy's still hanging on, maybe. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Betsy who doesn't
I'm
have
looking at Matt.
No, it's not.
Okay, I got you. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a good spot, bro.
Yeah.
This is a good spot. Yeah. We're done. I think we're good.
Are we ready to wrap this up tonight?
I think we're good. I think that this is a good spot to stop because what we talked about tonight, we've gone from all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Adam went from one way, Matthew from another, Leslie from another, my cousin who's no longer here went somewhere else. I think this is something that we should continue on.
We did not even get to talk about women's issues tonight. That's a whole other discussion.
Well, are you having the prominent person tomorrow morning?
No, even though we talked about
that. Are you coming back for breakfast?
But did we solve anything?
We're not going home. We're staying right here.
What do we do to solve the problems? And in order to enhance and improve ourselves as HR people in our roles today. Because we have people who are managers and directors and learning and development and coaches.
Well, we can only solve the problems within our own spheres of influence.
Right.
None of us are
have the sphere of influence at that national level to be solving those problems or international level.
What's interesting about tonight's discussion, even though there's dissenting and differing opinions, that we're adult enough and open enough to have real dialogue, which is what is important and I think is missing on some national levels, that there's not enough real dialogue to work towards solving a problem.
Agreed 100%.
So I'm going to have to ask everyone here, in your organizations, do you guys have this dialogue in your boardrooms or on your team meetings?
Oh, I'm here to tell you, absolutely yes. That's why I'm still there. I'm serious. I've been there for 5 years. I'm not going to mention it, but that's why I'm still there. I have a great boss, I have great business partners, and an amazing culture and an awesome team. That's the only reason I'm still there.
As a one-person organization, I talk to myself all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I've been with my current organization for 18 months. Past organizations, no, this hasn't always happened, right. But... in my current organization, I would say, yes, I have sat down with my CEO and CFO and chief people officer, and we have had some of these conversations. They've disagreed with me at times, and I've disagreed with them.
Adam.
What's that?
Are we evolving?
I think some organizations may.
Okay.
But I don't think, again, I hardly think that mine is the norm.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, I came from an extremely large organization that...
we can say that you and I worked there together.
Yeah.
We can say that. That's how I know you.
I don't think those conversations were had.
I would agree with you 100%.
I think you had a lot of groupthink. I think you had a lot of yes to power. Mm-hmm. And I have never had a problem with saying no if I did not agree with something ethically or morally. And frankly, that's part of why I was exited from that organization.
I'm with you.
So the, but yeah, feeling and being able to say you disagree with people in power and having that be a safe conversation is absolutely in some organizations alive and well.
But that's how you learn.
Yeah.
That's how you learn. When you're willing to sit back, listen to a point of view that's different than yours, mm-hmm. and digest that information and then learn from it, that's what's key. And I'm with you. In other organizations, I haven't had that. My current organization is the only reason I'm still there.
Yeah.
It is. Where I'm at right now is the only organization that I can really say that what I teach to my students at night is almost a realism of what we learn in the textbook.
And that's so special.
No, it is. It is.
Yeah.
Because I can tell them everything you learn right now of what an organization should be, in theory, it's an application to where I'm at right now, hence why I'm still there.
Absolutely. And when you find those organizations, you're going to want to cling to them.
Absolutely.
I mean, and people do, they don't leave companies, they leave bosses.
Yep.
But I think most of those bosses, if you have a bad boss, it's because there is a bad company and a bad culture.
Yeah.
A bad culture in that company?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get if that boss has been allowed to...
I almost disagree with you, but you're right. If you have a great organization that allows a boss to taint and completely destroy the culture of their team,
then that culture is not being lived.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah. Yes, sir.
And it always comes back to the simplest thing, holding people accountable.
Yep.
If you don't write it down and you don't have that documentation, you know, you've got to hold your people accountable.
Dude, we need to seriously. We need to have you back.
All right.
We really do. This was awesome, Adam, Matthew, Leslie, in our secret location. In our secret location in Winter Park, we gotta have you back. Will you come? Do you commit right now to the HR Talk listeners that you're gonna come back?
Absolutely, I'll be back.
Matthew,
of course, I'll be back.
Leslie, always here. She's always here. She
has
a chair that's named Leslie, so she's good.
It's the short chair that has mimosa sitting next to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right. So we're good. So, folks, I think this is a good place to stop. Great dialogue. There's no possible way we can continue this without diminishing that value. So, going forward, we are going to go ahead and stop this right now. But, folks, let me tell you, anything you want to talk about, any ideas you have for the show, you can reach us. You can email us. We are on iTunes, we are on Spotify, we are on FM radio, we are on Google Play, we are everywhere. Come find us, HR Talk,
HRTalk.com, HRTalkPodcast.com. You can email us at HRTalk@Biesco.com or leave us a message on Instagram, Twitter, anything that you want to focus on. We're here.
Thank you for listening to HR Talk. On behalf of Ricky, JC, and everyone here, drive safe and have a good night.